explain it, she'll understand, because she understands everything already. I'll tend to her as no mother ever tended a child, a daughter. Nobody will ever get my milk no more, except my own children. I never had to give it to nobody else, and the one time I did, it was took from me. They held me down and took it. Milk that belonged to my baby. Nan had to nurse white babies, and me too, because Mam was in the rice. The little white babies got it first, and I got what was left, or none. There was no nursing milk to call my own. I know what it is to be without the milk that belongs to you, to have to fight and holler for it, and to have so little left. I'll tell Beloved about that. She'll understand. She's my daughter. The one I managed to have milk for and to get it to her even though they stole it. After they handled me like I was the cow. No, the goat. Back behind the stable because it was too nasty to stay in with the horses. But I wasn't too nasty to cook their food or take care of Mrs. Garner. I tended her like I would have tended my own mother if she needed me, if they had let her out the rice field, because I was the one she didn't throw away. I couldn't have done more for that woman than I would my own ma'am, if she was to take sick and need me, and I'd have stayed with her till she got well or died, and I would have stayed after that, except Nan snatched me back before I could check for the sign. It was her all right, but for a long time I didn't believe it. I looked everywhere for that hat, stuttered after that, didn't stop it till I saw Hallie. Oh, but that's all over now. I'm here, I lasted, and my girl come home. Now I can look at things again, because she's here to see them too. After the shed, I stopped. Now, in the morning, when I light the fire, I mean to look out the window. To see what the sun is doing to the day. Does it hit the pump handle first, or the spigot? See if the grass is gray-green or brown or what. Now I know why Baby Suggs pounded color her last years. She never had time to see, let alone enjoy it before. Took her a long time to finish with blue, then yellow, then green. She was well into pink when she died. I don't believe she wanted to get to red. And I understand why. Because me and Beloved outdid ourselves with it. Matter of fact, that and her pinkish headstone was the last color I recall. Now I'll be on the lookout. Think what spring will be for us. I'll plant carrots. Just so she can see them. And turnips. Have you ever seen one, baby? A prettier thing God never made. White and purple with a tender tail and a hard head. Feels good when you hold it in your hand. And smells like the creek when it floods. Bitter, but happy. We'll smell them together, Beloved. Beloved. Because you're mine. And I have to show you these things. And teach you what a mother should. Funny how you lose sight of some things and memory others. I never will forget that white girl's hands, Amy. But I forget the color of all that hair on her head. Eyes must have been gray, though. Seemed like I do remember that. Mrs. Garner's was light brown while she was well. Got dark when she took sick. A strong woman used to be. And when she talked off her head, she'd say it. I used to be strong as a mule, Jenny. Call me Jenny when she was babbling. And I can bear witness to that, tall and strong. The two of us on a cord of wood was as good as two men. Hurt her like the devil not to be able to raise her head off the pillow. Still can't figure why she thought she needed school teacher, though. I wonder if she lasted, like I did. Last time I saw her, she couldn't do nothing but cry, and I couldn't do a thing for her but wipe her face when I told her what they'd done to me. Somebody had to know it, hear it, somebody. Maybe she lasted. School teacher wouldn't treat her the way he treated me. First beating I took was the last. Nobody gonna keep me from my children. Hadn't been for me taking care of her, maybe I would have known what happened. Maybe Hallie was trying to get to me. I stood by her bed, waiting for her to finish with the slop jar. When I got her back in the bed, she said she was cold, hot as blazes, and she wanted quilts. Said to shut the window. I told her no. She needed the color, I needed the breeze. Long as those yellow curtains flapped, I was all right. Should have heeded her. Maybe what sounded like shots really was. Maybe I would have seen somebody or something. Maybe. Anyhow, I took my babies to the corn, Hallie or no. Jesus. When I heard that woman's rattle, she said, any more? I told her I didn't know. She said, I've been here all night, can't wait. I tried to make her. She said, can't do it, come on. Who? Not a man around. Boys scared. You sleep on my back, Denver, sleep in my stomach. Felt like I was split in two. I told her to take you all. I had to go back, in case. She just looked at me, said, woman, bit a piece of my tongue off when they opened my back. It was hanging by a shred. I didn't mean to. Clamped down on it. It come right off. I thought, good God, I'm gonna eat myself up. They dug a hole for my stomach so as not to hurt the baby. Denver don't like for me to talk about it. She hates anything about Sweet Home except how she was born. But you was there, and even if you're too young to memory it, I can tell it to you. The grape arbor. You memory that? I ran so fast, flies beat me to you. I would have known right away who you was when the sun blotted out your face the way it did when I took you to the grape arbor. I would have known at once when my water broke, the minute I saw you sitting on the stump it broke. And when I did see your face, it had more than a hint of what you would look like after all these years. I would have known who you were right away, because the cup after cup of water you drank proved and connected to the fact that you dribbled clear spit on my face the day I got to 124. I would have known right off, but Paul D. distracted me. Otherwise, I would have seen my fingernail prints right there on your forehead for all the world to see. From when I held your head up, out in the shed. And later on, when you asked me about the earrings I used to dangle for you to play with, I would have recognized you right off. Except for Paul D. Seems to me he wanted you out from the beginning, but I wouldn't let him. What you think? And look how he ran when he found out about me and you in the shed. Too rough for him to listen to. Too thick, he said. My love was too thick. What he know about it? Who in the world is he willing to die for? Would he give his privates to a stranger in return for a carving? Some other way, he said. There must have been some other way. Let school teacher haul us away, I guess, to measure your behind before he tore it up. I have felt what it felt like. And nobody, walking or stretched out, is going to make you feel it, too. Not you, not none of mine. And when I tell you, you mine, I also mean I'm yours. I wouldn't draw breath without my children. I told Baby Suggs that, and she got down on her knees to beg God's pardon for me. Still, it's so. My plan was to take us all to the other side, where my own ma'am is. They stopped me from getting us there, but they didn't stop you from getting here. Ha ha! You came right on back, like a good girl. like a daughter, which is what I wanted to be and would have been if my ma'am had been able to get out of the rice long enough before they hanged her and let me be one. You know what? She had the bit so many times she smiled. When she wasn't smiling, she smiled. And I never saw her own smile. I wonder what they was doing when they was caught. Running, you think? No, not that. Because she was my ma'am, and nobody's ma'am would run off and leave her daughter, would she? Would she now leave her in the yard with a one-armed woman, even if she hadn't been able to suckle the daughter for more than a week or two and had to turn her over to another woman's tip that never had enough for all? They said it was the bit that made her smile when she didn't want to. Like the Saturday girls working the slaughterhouse yard. When I came out of jail, I saw them plain. They came when the shift changed, on Saturday when the men got paid, and worked behind the fences, back of the outhouse. Some worked standing up, leaning on the toolhouse door. They gave some of their nickels and dimes to the foreman as they left. But by then, their smiles was over. Some of them drank liquor to keep from feeling what they felt. Some didn't drink a drop, just beat it on over to Phelps to pay for what their children needed or their mammies. Work in a pig yard, that has got to be something for a woman to do. And I got close to it myself when I got out of jail and bought, so to speak, your name. But the Bodwins got me the cooking job at Sawyer's and left me able to smile on my own, like now, when I think about you. But you know all that, because you're smart, like everybody said. Because when I got here, you was crawling already, trying to get up the stairs. Baby Suggs had them painted white, so you could see your way to the top in the dark, where the lamplight didn't reach. Lord, you loved the stair steps. I got close to being a Saturday girl. I had already worked a stonemason's shop. A step to the slaughterhouse would have been a short one. When I put that headstone up, I wanted to lay in there with you, put your head on my shoulder, and keep you warm. And I would have. If Bugler and Howard and Denver didn't need me, because my mind was homeless then, I couldn't lay down with you then. No matter how much I wanted to, I couldn't lay down nowhere in peace back then. Now I can. I can sleep like the drowned. Have mercy. She come back to me. My daughter. And she is mine. Beloved is my sister. I swallowed her blood right along with my mother's milk. The first thing I heard, after not hearing anything, was the sound of her crawling up the stairs. She was my secret company until Paul D. came. He threw her out. Ever since I was little, she was my company, and she helped me wait for my daddy. Me and her waited for him. I love my mother, but I know she killed one of her own daughters. And tender as she is with me, I'm scared of her because of it. She missed killing my brothers and they knew it. They told me die witch stories to show me the way to do it if I ever needed to. Maybe it was getting that close to dying made them want to fight the war. That's what they told me they were going to do. I guess they'd rather be around killing men than killing women. And there sure is something in her that makes it all right to kill her own. All the time, I'm afraid the thing that happened that made it all right for my mother to kill my sister could happen again. I don't know what it is. I don't know who it is. But maybe there is something else terrible enough to make her do it again. I need to know what that thing might be, but I don't want to. Whatever it is, it comes from outside this house, outside the yard, and it can come right on in the yard if it wants to. So I never leave this house, and I watch over the yard, so it can't happen again, and my mother won't have to kill me, too. Not since Miss Lady Jones's house have I left 124 by myself. Never. The only other times, two times in all, I was with my mother. Once to see Grandma Baby put down next to Beloved. She's my sister. The other time, Paul D. went too. And when we came back, I thought the house would still be empty from when he threw my sister's ghost out. But no. When I came back to 124, there she was, Beloved, waiting for me, tired from her long journey back, ready to be taken care of, ready for me to protect her. This time, I have to keep my mother away from her. That's hard, but I have to. It's all on me. I've seen my mother in a dark place, with scratching noises, a smell coming from her dress. I've been with her where something little watched us from the corners and touched. Sometimes they touched. I didn't remember it for a long time until Nelson Lord made me. I asked her if it was true, but couldn't hear what she said, and there was no point in going back to Lady Jones if you couldn't hear what anybody said. So quiet made me have to read faces and learn how to figure out what people were thinking, so I didn't need to hear what they said. That's how come me and Beloved could play together, not talking, on the porch, by the creek, in the secret house. It's all on me now, but she can count on me. I thought she was trying to kill her that day in the clearing, kill her back. But then she kissed her neck, and I have to warn her about that. Don't love her too much. Don't. Maybe it's still in her, the thing that makes it all right to kill her children. I have to tell her. I have to protect her. She cut my head off every night. Bugler and Howard told me she would, and she did. Her pretty eyes looking at me like I was a stranger. Not mean or anything, but like I was somebody she found and felt sorry for. Like she didn't want to do it, but she had to, and it wasn't going to hurt. That it was just a thing grown-up people do, like pull a splinter out your hand, touch the corner of a towel in your eye if you get a cinder in it. She looks over at Bugler and Howard, see if they all right. Then she comes over to my side. I know she'll be good at it, careful, that when she cuts it off it'll be done right, it won't hurt. And after she does it, I lie there for a minute, with just my head. Then she carries it downstairs to braid my hair. I try not to cry, but it hurts so much to comb it. When she finishes the combing and starts the braiding, I get sleepy. I want to go to sleep, but I know if I do, I won't wake up. So I have to stay awake while she finishes my hair. Then I can sleep. The scary part is waiting for her to come in and do it, not when she does it, but when I wait for her to. Only place she can't get to me in the night is Grandma Baby's room. The room we sleep in upstairs used to be where the help slept when white people lived here. They had a kitchen outside, too, but Grandma Baby turned it into a woodshed and tool room when she moved in. And she boarded up the back door that led to it, because she said she didn't want to make that journey no more. She built around it to make a storeroom, so if you want to get in 124, you have to come by her. Said she didn't care what folks said about her fixing a two-story house up like a cabin where you cook inside. She said they told her visitors with nice dresses don't want to sit in the same room with the cook stove and the peelings and the grease and the smoke. She wouldn't pay them no mind, she said. I was safe at night in there with her. All I could hear was me breathing. But sometimes in the day, I couldn't tell whether it was me breathing or somebody next to me. I used to watch her boy's stomach go in and out, to see if it matched mine, holding my breath to get off his rhythm, releasing it to get on, just to see whose it was. A sound like when you blow soft in a bottle, only regular, regular. Am I making that sound? Is Howard? Who is? That was when everybody was quiet, and I couldn't hear anything they said. I didn't care either, because the quiet let me dream my daddy better. I always knew he was coming. Something was holding him up. He had a problem with the horse. The river flooded. The boat sank, and he had to make a new one. Sometimes it was a lynch mob or a windstorm. He was coming, and it was a secret. I spent all of my outside self loving Mam so she wouldn't kill me, loving her even when she braided my head at night. I never let her know my daddy was coming for me. Grandma Baby thought he was coming, too. For a while she thought so. Then she stopped. I never did, even when Bugler and Howard ran away. Then Paul D. came in here. I heard his voice downstairs and Mam laughing, so I thought it was him, my daddy. Nobody comes to this house anymore. But when I got downstairs, it was Paul D., and he didn't come for me. He wanted my mother at first. Then he wanted my sister, too. But she got him out of here, and I'm so glad he's gone. Now it's just us, and I can protect her till my daddy gets here to help me watch out for Mam and anything come in the yard. My daddy do anything for runny fried eggs, dip his bread in it. Grandma used to tell me his things. She said any time she could make him a plate of soft fried eggs was Christmas made him so happy. She said she was always a little scared of my daddy. He was too good, she said. From the beginning, she said he was too good for the world. Scared her. She thought he'll never make it through nothing. White people must have thought so, too, because they never got split up. So she got the chance to know him, look after him, and he scared her the way he loved things. Animals and tools and crops and the alphabet. He could count on paper. The boss taught him. Offered to teach the other boys, but only my daddy wanted it. She said the other boys said no. One of them, with a number for a name, said it would change his mind. Made him forget things he shouldn't and memorize things he shouldn't. And he didn't want his mind messed up. But my daddy said, if you can't count, they can cheat you. If you can't read, they can beat you. They thought that was funny. Grandma said she didn't know, but it was because my daddy could count on paper and figure that he bought her away from there. And she said she always wished she could read the Bible, like real preachers. So it was good for me to learn how, and I did. Until it got quiet, and all I could hear was my own breathing and one other who knocked over the milk jug while it was sitting on the table. Nobody near it. Mam whipped Bugler, but he didn't touch it. Then it messed up all the iron clothes and put its hands in the cake. Looked like I was the only one knew right away who it was. Just like when she came back, I knew who she was, too. Not right away. But soon as she spelled her name, not her given name, but the one Mam paid the stonecutter for, I knew. And when she wondered about Mam's earrings, something I didn't know about, well, that just made the cheese more binding. My sister come to help me. wait for my daddy. My daddy was an angel man. He could look at you and tell where you hurt, and he could fix it too. He made a hanging thing for Grandma Baby so she could pull herself up from the floor when she woke up in the morning, and he made a step so when she stood up she was level. Grandma said she was always afraid a white man would knock her down in front of her children. She behaved and did everything right in front of her children because she didn't want them to see her knocked down. She said it made children crazy to see that. At Sweet Home, nobody did or said they would, so my daddy never saw it there and never went crazy. And even now, I bet he's trying to get here. If Paul D could do it, my daddy could too. Angel man. We should all be together. Me, him, and Beloved. Mam could stay or go off with Paul D if she wanted to. Unless Daddy wanted her himself. But I don't think he would now since she let Paul D in her bed. Grandma Baby said people looked down on her because she had 8 children with different men. Colored people and white people both looked down on her for that. Slaves not supposed to have pleasurable feelings on their own. Their body's not supposed to be like that. But they have to have as many children as they can to please whoever owned them. Still, they were not supposed to have pleasure deep down. She said for me not to listen to all that, that I should always listen to my body and love it. The secret house. When she died, I went there. Mam would let me go outside in the yard and eat with the others. We stayed inside. That hurt. I know Grandma Baby would have liked the party and the people who came to it because she got low not seeing anybody or going anywhere, just grieving and thinking about colors and how she made a mistake. That what she thought about what the heart and the body could do was wrong. The white people came anyway, in her yard. She had done everything right, and they came in her yard anyway. And she didn't know what to think. All she had left was her heart, and they busted it, so even the war couldn't rouse her. She told me all my daddy's things, how hard he worked to buy her. After the cake was ruined and the ironed clothes all messed up, and after I heard my sister crawling up the stairs to get back to her bed, she told me my things too, that I was charmed. My birth was, and I got saved all the time, and that I shouldn't be afraid of the ghost. It wouldn't harm me because I tasted its blood when Mam nursed me. She said the ghost was after Mam and her too for not doing anything to stop it. But it would never hurt me. I just had to watch out for it because it was a greedy ghost and needed a lot of love, which was only natural considering. And I do love her. I do. She played with me and always came to be with me whenever I needed her. She's mine, Beloved. She's mine. I am Beloved, and she is mine. I see her take flowers away from leaves. She puts them in a round basket. The leaves are not for her. She fills the basket. She opens the grass. I would help her, but the clouds are in the way. How can I say things that are pictures? I'm not separate from her. There is no place where I stop. Her face is my own, and I want to be there in the place where her face is, and to be looking at it too. A hot thing. All of it is now. It is always now. There will never be a time when I am not crouching and watching others who are crouching too. I am always crouching. The man on my face is dead. His face is not mine. His mouth smells sweet, but his eyes are locked. Some who eat nasty themselves. I do not eat. The men without skin bring us their morning water to drink. We have none. At night I cannot see the dead man on my face. Daylight comes through the cracks, and I can see his locked eyes. I am not big. Small rats do not wait for us to sleep. Someone is thrashing, but there's no room to do it in. If we had more to drink, we could make tears. We cannot make sweat or morning water, so the men without skin bring us theirs. One time, they bring us sweet rocks to suck. We are all trying to leave our bodies behind. The man on my face has done it. It is hard to make yourself die forever. You sleep short and then return. In the beginning we could vomit. Now we do not. Now we cannot. His teeth are pretty white points. Someone is trembling. I can feel it over here. He is fighting hard to leave his body, which is a small bird, trembling. There is no room to tremble, so he's not able to die. My own dead man is pulled away from my face. I miss his pretty white points. We are not crouching now. We're standing, but my legs are like my dead man's eyes. I cannot fall because there's no room to. The men without skin are making loud noises. I am not dead. The bread is sea-colored. I'm too hungry to eat it. The sun closes my eyes. Those able to die are in a pile. I cannot find my man, the one whose teeth I have loved. A hot thing. The little hill of dead people, a hot thing. The men without skin push them through with poles. The woman is there with the face I want, the face that is mine. They fall into the sea, which is the color of the bread. She has nothing in her ears. If I had the teeth of the man who died on my face, I would bite the circle around her neck, bite it away. I know she does not like it. Now there is room to crouch and to watch the crouching others. It is the crouching that is now, always now, inside. The woman with my face is in the sea, a hot thing. In the beginning I could see her. I could not help her because the clouds were in the way. In the beginning I could see her, the shining in her ears. She does not like the circle around her neck. I know this. I look hard at her so she will know that the clouds are in the way. I am sure she saw me. I'm looking at her see me. She empties out her eyes. I am there in the place where her face is and telling her the noisy clouds were in my way. She wants her earrings. She wants her round basket. I want her face, a hot thing. In the beginning, the women are away from the men, and the men are away from the women. Storms rock us and mix the men into the women and the women into the men. That is when I begin to be on the back of the man. For a long time, I see only his neck and his wide shoulders above me. I am small. I love him because he has a song. When he turned around to die, I see the teeth he sang through. His singing was soft. His singing is of the place where a woman takes flowers away from their leaves and puts them in a round basket before the clouds. She is crouching near us, but I do not see her until he locks his eyes and dies on my face. We are that way. There is no breath coming from his mouth, and the place where breath should be is sweet-smelling. The others do not know he is dead. I know. His song is gone. Now I love his pretty little teeth instead. I cannot lose her again. My dead man was in the way like the noisy cloud. When he dies on my face, I can see hers. She's going to smile at me. She's going to. Her sharp earrings are gone. The men without skin are making loud noises. They push my own man through. They do not push the woman with my face through. She goes in. They do not push her. She goes in. The little hill is gone. She was going to smile at me. She was going to. A hot thing. They are not crouching now. We are. They are floating on the water. They break up the little hill and push it through. I cannot find my pretty teeth. I see the dark face that is going to smile at me. It is my dark face that is going to smile at me. The iron circle is around our neck. She does not have sharp earrings in her ears or around a basket. She goes in the water with my face. I am standing in the rain falling. The others are taken. I am not taken. I am falling like the rain is. I watch him eat. Inside I am crouching to keep from falling with the rain. I'm going to be in pieces. He hurts where I sleep. He puts his finger there. I drop the food and break into pieces. She took my face away. There's no one to want me, to say me my name. I wait on the bridge because she is under it. There's night and there is day. Again, again, night, day. Night, day, I am waiting. No iron circle is around my neck. No boats go on this water. No men without skin. My dead man is not floating here. His teeth are down there, where the blue is and the grass. So is the face I want. The face that is going to smile at me. It is going to. In the day, diamonds are in the water where she is, and turtles. In the night, I hear chewing and swallowing and laughter. It belongs to me. She is the laugh. I am the laugher. I see her face, which is mine. It is the face that was going to smile at me in the place where we crouched. Now she is going to. Her face comes through the water. A hot thing. Her face is mine. She's not smiling. She's chewing and swallowing. I have to have my face. I go in. The grass opens. She opens it. I am in the water, and she's coming. There is no round basket, no iron circle around her neck. She goes up where the diamonds are. I follow her. We are in the diamonds, which are her earrings now. My face is coming. I have to have it. I am looking for the join. I am loving my face so much. My dark face is close to me. I want to join. She whispers to me. She whispers. I reach for her. Chewing and swallowing, she touches me. She knows I want to join. She chews and swallows me. I am gone. Now I am her face. My own face has left me. I see me swim away. A hot thing. I see the bottoms of my feet. I am alone. I want to be the two of us. I want to join. I come out of blue water. After the bottoms of my feet swim away from me, I come up. I need to find a place to be. The air is heavy. I am not dead. I am not. There is a house. There is what she whispered to me. I am where she told me. I am not dead. I sit. The sun closes my eyes. When I open them, I see the face I lost. Sethus is the face that left me. Sethus sees me see her, and I see the smile. Her smiling face is the place for me. It is the face I lost. She is my face, smiling at me, doing it at last. A hot thing. Now we can join. A hot thing. I am beloved, and she is mine. Setha is the one that picked flowers, yellow flowers, in the place before the crouching. Took them away from their green leaves. They are on the quilt now where we sleep. She was about to smile at me when the men without skin came and took us up into the sunlight with the dead. And shoved them into the sea. Setha went into the sea. She went there. They did not push her. She went there. She was getting ready to smile at me. And when she saw the dead people pushed into the sea, she went also and left me there with no face or hers. Setha is the face I found and lost in the water under the bridge. When I went in, I saw her face coming to me, and it was my face, too. I wanted to join. I tried to join, but she went up into the pieces of light at the top of the water. I lost her again, but I found the house she whispered to me, and there she was, smiling at last. It's good, but I cannot lose her again. All I want to know is why did she go in the water in the place where we crouched? Why did she do that when she was just about to smile at me? I wanted to join her in the sea, but I could not move. I wanted to help her when she was picking the flowers, but the clouds of gun smoke blinded me and I lost her. 3 times I lost her, once with the flowers, because of the noisy clouds of smoke, once when she went into the sea instead of smiling at me. Once under the bridge, when I went in to join her, and she came toward me but did not smile. She whispered to me, chewed me, and swam away. Now I have found her in this house. She smiles at me, and it is my own face smiling. I will not lose her again. She is mine. Tell me the truth. Didn't you come from the other side? Yes, I was on the other side. You came back because of me? Yes. You remember me? Oh, yes, I remember you. You never forgot me. Your face is mine. Do you forgive me? Will you stay? You're safe here now. Where are the men without skin? Out there, way off. Can they get in here? No. They tried that once, but I stopped them. They won't ever come back. One of them was in the house I was in. He hurt me. They can't hurt us no more. Where are your earrings? They took them from me. The men without skin took them? Yes. I was gonna help you. But the clouds got in the way. There are no clouds here. If they put an iron circle around your neck, I will bite it away. Beloved, I will make you a round basket. Your back, your back. Will we smile at me? Can't you see I'm smiling? I love your face. We played by the creek. I was there in the water. In the quiet time we played. The clouds were noisy and in the way. When I needed you, you came to be with me. I needed her face to smile. I could only hear breathing. The breathing is gone, only the teeth are left. She said you wouldn't hurt me. She hurt me. I will protect you. I want her face. Don't love her too much. I am loving her too much. Watch out for her. She can give you dreams. She chews and swallows. Don't fall asleep when she braids your hair. She is the laugh. I am the laughter. I watch the house. I watch the yard. She left me. Daddy's coming for us. A hot thing. Beloved, you are my sister. You are my daughter. You are my face. You are me. I have found you again. You've come back to me. You are my beloved. You are mine. You are mine. You are mine. I have your milk. I have your smile. I will take care of you. You are my face. I am you. Why did you leave me, who am you? I will never leave you again. Don't ever leave me again. You will never leave me again. You went in the water. I drank your blood. I brought your milk. You forgot to smile. I loved you. You hurt me. You came back to me. You left me. I waited for you. You are mine. You are mine. You are mine. It was a tiny church, no bigger than a rich man's parlor. The pews had no backs, and since the congregation was also the choir, it didn't need a stall. Certain members had been assigned the construction of a platform to raise the preacher a few inches above his congregation, but it was a less than urgent task, since the major elevation, a white oak cross, had already taken place. Before it was the Church of the Holy Redeemer, it was a dry goods shop that had no use for side windows, just front ones for display. These were papered over while members considered whether to paint or curtain them, how to have privacy without losing the little light that might want to shine on them. In the summer, the doors were left open for ventilation. In winter, an iron stove in the aisle did what it could. At the front of the church was a sturdy porch where customers used to sit, and children laughed at the boy who got his head stuck between railings. On a sunny and windless day in January, it was actually warmer out there than inside, if the iron stove was cold. The damp cellar was fairly warm, but there was no light lighting the pallet or the wash basin or the nail from which a man's clothes could be hung. And an oil lamp in a cellar was sad. So Paul D. sat on the porch steps and got additional warmth from a bottle of liquor jammed in his coat pocket. Warmth and red eyes. He held his wrist between his knees, not to keep his hand still, but because he had nothing else to hold on to. His tobacco tin, blown open, spilled contents that floated freely and made him there play and pray. He couldn't figure out why it took so long. He may as well have jumped in the fire with Sixo, and they both could have had a good laugh. Surrender was bound to come anyway. Why not meet it with a laugh, shouting, 7-0? Why not? Why the delay? He'd already seen his brother wave goodbye from the back of a dray, fried chicken in his pocket, tears in his eyes. Mother, father, didn't remember the one, never saw the other. He was the youngest of three half-brothers, same mother, different fathers, sold to Garner and kept there, forbidden to leave the farm for 20 years. Once in Maryland, he met four families of slaves who had all been together for 100 years. Great-grands, grands, mothers, fathers, aunts, uncles, cousins, children, half-white, part-white, all black, mixed with Indian. He watched them with awe and envy, and each time he discovered large families of black people, he made them identify over and over who each was, what relation, who, in fact, belonged to who. That there's my auntie. This here's her boy. Yonder is my pap's cousin. My mam was married twice. This my half-sister, and these her two children. Now my wife, nothing like that, had ever been his. And growing up at Sweet Home, he didn't miss it. He had his brothers, two friends, baby Suggs in the kitchen, a boss who showed them how to shoot and listen to what they had to say, a mistress who made their soap and never raised her voice. For 20 years, they had all lived in that cradle until baby left, Setha came, and Hallie took her. He made a family with her, and Sixo was hell-bent to make one with a 30-mile woman. When Paul D. waved goodbye to his oldest brother, the boss was dead, the mistress nervous, and the cradle already split. Sixo said the doctor made Mrs. Garner sick, said he was giving her to drink what stallions got when they broke a leg and no gunpowder could be spared. And had it not been for schoolteacher's new rules, he would have told her so. They laughed at him. Sixo had a knowing tale about everything, including Mr. Garner's stroke, which he said was a shot in his ear, put there by a jealous neighbor. "Where's the blood?" they asked him. There was no blood. Mr. Garner came home, bent over his mare's neck, sweating and blue-white. Not a drop of blood. Sixo grunted, the only one of them not sorry to see him go. Later, however, he was mighty sorry. They all were. "Why she call on him?" Paldy asked. "Why she need the school teacher?" "She needs somebody can figure," said Hallie. "You can do figures." "Not like that." "No, man," said Sixo. "She need another white on the place."
"What for?"
"What you think? What you think?" Well, that's the way it was. Nobody counted on Garner dying. Nobody thought he could. How about that? Everything rested on Garner being alive. Without his life, each of theirs fell to pieces. Now, ain't that slavery, or what is it? At the peak of his strength, taller than tall men and stronger than most, they clipped him, Paul D. First his shotgun, then his thoughts, for school teacher didn't take advice from Negroes. The information they offered, he called backtalk, and developed a variety of corrections, which he recorded in his notebook, to re-educate them. He complained they ate too much, rested too much, talked too much, which was certainly true compared to him, because school teacher ate little, spoke less, and rested not at all. Once he saw them playing a pitching game, and his look of deeply felt hurt was enough to make Paul D. blink. He was as hard on his pupils as he was on them, except for the corrections. For years, Paul D. believed school teacher broke into children what Garner had raised into men, and it was that that made them run off. Now, plagued by the contents of his tobacco tin, he wondered how much difference there really was between before school teacher and after. Garner called and announced them men, but only on Sweet Home and by his leave. Was he naming what he saw or creating what he did not? That was the wonder of Sixo and even Hallie. It was always clear to Paul D. that those two were men whether Garner said so or not. It troubled him that concerning his own manhood, he could not satisfy himself on that point. Oh, he did manly things, but was that Garner's gift or his own will? What would he have been anyway, before Sweet Home, without Garner, in Sixo's country, or his mother's, or, God help him, on the boat? Did a white man saying it make it so? Suppose God woke up one morning and changed his mind, took the word away. Would they have run then? And if he didn't, would the Pauls have stayed there all their lives? Why did the brothers need the one whole night to decide, to discuss whether they would join Sixo and Hallie? Because they had been isolated in a wonderful lie, dismissing Hallie's and Baby Suggs's life before Sweet Home as bad luck, ignorant of or amused by Sixo's dark stories, protected and convinced they were special, never suspecting the problem of Alpha Georgia. Being so in love with the look of the world, putting up with anything and everything, just to stay alive in a place where a moon he had no right to was nevertheless there, loving small and in secret. His little love was a tree, of course, but not like brother, old, wide, and beckoning. In Alpha Georgia, there was an aspen too young to call a sapling, just a shoot, no taller than his waist, the kind of thing a man would cut to whip his horse. Song murder and the aspen. He stayed alive to sing songs that murdered life and watched an aspen that confirmed it, and never for a minute did he believe he could escape until it rained. Afterward, after the Cherokee pointed and sent him running toward blossoms, he wanted simply to move, go, pick up one day, and be somewhere else the next. Resigned to life without aunts, cousins, children, even a woman, until Setha. And then she moved him. Just when doubt, regret, and every single unasked question was packed away, long after he believed he had willed himself into being, at the very time and place he wanted to take root, she moved him from room to room, like a rag doll. Sitting on the porch of a dry goods church, a little bit drunk and nothing much to do, he could have these thoughts, slow what-if thoughts that cut deep but struck nothing solid a man could hold on to. So he held his wrists, passing by that woman's life, getting in it, and letting it get in him, had set him up for this fall. Wanting to live out his life with a whole woman was new, and losing the feeling of it made him want to cry and think deep thoughts that struck nothing solid. When he was drifting, thinking only about the next meal and night's sleep, when everything was packed tight in his chest, he had no sense of failure, of things not working out. Anything that worked at all worked out. Now he wondered what all went wrong. And starting with the plan, everything had. It was a good plan, too. Worked out in detail with every possibility of error eliminated. Sixo, hitching up the horses, is speaking English again and tells Hallie what his 30-mile woman told him, that 7 Negroes on her place were joining 2 others going north, that the 2 others had done it before and knew the way, that 1 of the 2, a woman, would wait for them in the corn when it was high, 1 night, and half the next day she would wait, and if they came, she would take them to the caravan where the others would be hidden, that she would rattle, and that would be the sign. Sixo was going, his woman was going, and Hallie was taking his whole family. The 2 Pauls say they need time to think about it, time to wonder where they will end up, how they will live, what work, who will take them in. Should they try to get to Paul F., whose owner, they remember, lived in something called the Trace? It takes them 1 evening's conversation to decide. Now all they have to do is wait through the spring till the corn is as high as it ever got and the moon as fat. And plan. Is it better to leave in the dark to get a better start or go at daybreak to be able to see the way better? Sixo spits at the suggestion. Night gives them more time and the protection of color. He does not ask them if they are afraid. He manages some dry runs to the corn at night, burying blankets and two knives near the creek. Will Setha be able to swim the creek? They ask him. It will be dry, he says, when the corn is tall. There is no food to put by, but Setha says she will get a jug of cane syrup or molasses and some bread when it is near the time to go. She only wants to be sure the blankets are where they should be, for they will need them to tie her baby on her back and to cover them during the journey. There are no clothes other than what they wear, and of course no shoes. The knives will help them eat, but they bury rope and a pot as well. A good plan. They watch and memorize the comings and goings of school teacher and his pupils. What is wanted when and where? How long it takes. Mrs. Garner, restless at night, is sunk in sleep all morning. Some days the pupils and their teacher do lessons until breakfast. One day a week they skip breakfast completely and travel 10 miles to church, expecting a large dinner upon their return. School teacher writes in his notebook after supper. The pupils clean, mend, or sharpen tools. Setha's work is the most uncertain, because she is on call for Mrs. Garner any time, including nighttime, when the pain or the weakness or the downright loneliness is too much for her. So, Sixo and the Pauls will go after supper and wait in the creek for the 30-mile woman. Hallie will bring Setha and the three children before dawn, before the sun, before the chickens and the milking cow need attention. So by the time smoke should be coming from the cooking stove, they will be in or near the creek with the others. That way, if Mrs. Garner needs Setha in the night and calls her, Setha will be there to answer. They only have to wait through the spring. But Setha was pregnant in the spring, and by August is so heavy with child, she may not be able to keep up with the men who can carry the children, but not her. But neighbors, discouraged by Garner when he was alive, now feel free to visit Sweet Home and might appear in the right place at the wrong time. But Setha's children cannot play in the kitchen anymore, so she is dashing back and forth between house and quarters, fidgety and frustrated, trying to watch over them. They are too young for men's work, and the baby girl is 9 months old. Without Mrs. Garner's help, her work increases, as do schoolteachers' demands. But after the conversation about the shoat, Sixo is tied up with the stock at night, and locks are put on bins, pens, sheds, coops, the tack room and the barn door. There is no place to dart into or congregate. Sixo keeps a nail in his mouth now to help him undo the rope when he has to. But Hallie is told to work his extra on Sweet Home and has no call to be anywhere other than where school teacher tells him. Only Sixo, who has been stealing away to see his woman, and Hallie, who has been hired away for years, know what lies outside Sweet Home and how to get there. It is a good plan. It can be done right under the watchful pupils and their teacher. But they had to alter it, just a little. First, they changed the leaving. They memorized the directions Hallie gives them. Sixo, needing time to untie himself, break open the door and not disturb the horses, will leave later, joining them at the creek with the 30-mile woman. All four will go straight to the corn. Hallie, who needs more time now because of Setha, decides to bring her and the children at night, not wait till first light. They will go straight to the corn and not assemble at the creek. The corn stretches to their shoulders. It will never be higher. The moon is swelling. They can hardly harvest or chop or clear or pick or haul for listening for a rattle that is not bird or snake. Then one mid-morning they hear it, or Hallie does, and begins to sing it to the others. Hush, Hush. Somebody's calling my name. Hush. Hush. Somebody's calling my name. Oh, my Lord. Oh, my Lord. What shall I do? On his dinner break, he leaves the field. He has to. He has to tell Sepha that he has heard the sign. For two successive nights, she has been with Mrs. Garner, and he can't chance it that she will not know that this night she cannot be. The Pauls see him go. From underneath Brother's shade, where they are chewing corn cake, they see him swinging along. The bread tastes good. They lick sweat from their lips to give it a saltier flavor. School teacher and his pupils are already at the house eating dinner.